Welcome to Life Changing Insights with Diana Rinkoff, brought to you live from the Virtual Tone Studios in Houston, Texas, by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Diana Rinkoff.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the show. I think it'll be an exciting show, as this week we have Dave Krueger with us, and I'll tell you a little bit more about him in just a minute. I wanted to remind you that at any time you can go to the Tough Talk Radio Network and see all of the wonderful hosts that are available and have shows throughout the week. Also, my website at Life Changing Insights with DianaRinkoff.com. You can register to be a guest, leave me a message, or check out my blog. So at any time, feel free to check out what's going on at the Tough Talk Radio Network. I also wanted to let you know that I had an incredible experience this weekend. Tony Harris, who is on at 9 o'clock on Friday, graduated from the University of Phoenix this weekend, and she was the speaker for the students, and it was a magnificent speech. Tony really got the audience involved, and she talked about her formula for success, which is taking drastic steps plus perseverance minus the excuses equals success. So drastic steps with all of that, just keep pushing on, and minus the excuses equals success. So tune in to her show on Fridays at 9 o'clock and hear more about how you can take drastic steps with Tony Harris. Today we have a special guest. Dave, I met a couple years ago, and you know there's this great debate that even though there's all these advances in neuroscience and psychology, the mind remains kind of this complete, we really don't understand the mind and how it works or the nature of our subconscious. And it's a debated subject, and there's a lot of people who do work in this area, including myself, in working with the subconscious. But Dave brings a much more interesting approach to this. He has the psychology background. He has the psychoanalysis background. He adds neuroscience and even quantum physics to his equation. And so you will want to hear what Dave has to say today. Dave is the executive mentor coach and CEO of Mentor's Path, which is the name of his company, which does executive coaching. He does training. He has a wellness firm and is published. He works with executives, professionals. He works with athletes and actors and people just like you and me. He has developed a success strategy, and he has done that from all of his years of experience in psychotherapy, and we're going to let him tell us a little bit more about that. But what he has done recently is his latest book, The Secret Language of Money, and it is by McGraw-Hill, and it is a bestseller, and it's translated into 10 languages. But he really is going to help talk to us today about what are our stories around money. And I think all of us have a story. And so, Dave, welcome to the show. I'm sorry, I just got a message from Tony, and it took me off guard. So welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you very much, Dan. It's great to be here and a privilege.
Okay. You have such a varied background. I think we should start there. You spent many years actually working as a therapist, and now you've kind of taken a transition. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I practiced for 25 years, practiced and taught psychiatry and psychoanalysis, and at 25 years of practice, I retired, and I thought I was going to ranch and write, and that lasted about 2 months. And I knew I wanted to give back and be more involved and work with people and train and teach. So I did training to become certified as a professional coach and have evolved over the last decade to do that and develop my own firm and some of my own specialty certified training and licensing and new money story mentors and new life story wellness. So it's been I didn't think I could have as much fun in doing anything as I did in therapy and analysis with people I was privileged to work with. But this is even more fun of working with people, and mostly what I do is work individually. I work by telephone so I can work with people all over the world and also do training and various things such as we're doing to help people understand their stories, and particularly today we're going to focus on their money stories.
Right. But you do work with people from a professional coaching perspective or the wellness perspective, and this is the money side of it. So I want everyone to know that there is, you know, that you offer help in many different areas.
I began listening to people's money story in therapy and in analysis, and then also in moving into coaching to see what a struggle people had with really understanding their relationship with money and finding a way to change their money story. You know, one of the notable people who has published, who has a publishing firm, said, you know, Dave, I don't know how to tell my money story to myself in order to know how to change it, which exactly captures the dilemma that so many of us have.
I agree, because a lot of us believe that money can solve most of our problems and even make us happier. So how do we break that myth?
Well, money can solve many problems, or at least make them easier, but then we overreach and make money solve more than it should. So it gets pressed into service because it's commonly accepted as a social and personal resource, and it makes people feel self-sufficient. And then we also at times compare our inside to someone else's outside and think money can bridge the difference. So we give money meaning. We attribute emotional value, build a relationship with it, make it bigger than it is. And then at times we use money to try to regulate moods or adjust self-esteem, maybe even influence others. And money can make any statement and carry any message. It's the legal tender of desires. Money is sort of like the ink blot on the Rorschach test. There are unlimited interpretations.
So I can see how this would be very confusing. And, you know, a lot of us waste money or try to save it. Where does that come from?
Well, we do strange things with money. For example, intelligent people spend money they don't have. Sophisticated people get scammed at times. A couple of my clients were Madoff victims. Very sophisticated, very well-to-do people, very well-educated, but they were still victims. Rational people can trade in leisure time for money to buy back some of what they just forfeited. Otherwise, gifted people may not be able to figure out how to exchange their talent for appropriate income. Otherwise balanced individuals can either spend extravagantly or hoard compulsively. And reliable people can ignore financial matters sometimes until they snowball. And we're here in Houston with Enron. People with integrity can even write their own exceptions to rules about money.
Wow. So why do we make these money errors?
Well, money can represent anything. It's a stand-in for what we idealize and want, also for what we're afraid we don't have enough of. We covet it, chase it. We have, at the same time, a fascination and an antipathy for those who have a lot of money. Money is, when you think about it, in a most simple reductionistic way, money is a simple unit of value. It's a medium of exchange. Yet, at the same time, it's so complicated because it operates in our lives at so many levels that are emotional, unspoken, even unconscious. And then we make money mistakes because we use money to accomplish non-financial goals. We give money meaning. We breathe life into it. We give it emotional value. We build a relationship with it and make it way bigger than it is. For example, making as well as spending money stimulates the pleasure center of the brain and releases dopamine, the chemical that changes a state of mind.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit more about the neuroscience of this, because there's been so many advances. And, you know, we all have beliefs, behaviors that are associated with our, with how we grew up and all the experiences we've had in life. And so how does the brain actually work on these beliefs?
Well, that's a good question. This neuroscientists estimate that about 95% of our operating system is not conscious. In other words, the programs, the beliefs, the assumptions were laid down at an earlier time through exposure to parents, other people, society. And our beliefs then are the software that drives our behavior. Our conscious surface story may be dedicated, let's say, to making more money or accumulating wealth or saving for the future. But the internal beliefs can create a shadow story that goes in the opposite direction. So then we have a surface story that says, I want to accumulate wealth and save for retirement. The shadow story, because of these earlier beliefs, may be even unspoken, but may go the other direction and say, well, people who have significant money are lucky. People with money are different than me. More money would really probably make me unhappy, or I don't think I could really get ahead or have what it takes, or even truly spiritual people don't have money or wealth. So when the surface story and the shadow story go in opposite directions, we can have an impasse and feel and be stuck.
And then what might be some of the self-talk that we would hear ourselves saying?
Well, we're aware of this conscious story. We're aware of the surface story. What we're not aware of is the same time that we give voice to this shadow story, and when the shadow story counters the surface story, that's when we feel stuck. So it can do and be anything that goes in the opposite direction to create an impasse or just create a difficulty in proceeding. In other words, think about it this way. There are two basic motivations that we have as humans. One is to avoid pain, and the other is to seek pleasure. Anything that any of us wants to do and commits to do but yet doesn't do, like putting things off, procrastination, whatever we have committed to do and need and want to do that we don't need, that we don't do, The first question is, what's the pain associated with that? Because that's what's being avoided. So that means we simply have to ask a better question. What's the greater pleasure? Now, let's use this same example. And I want to make more money and accumulate wealth, but yet I'm not doing what it takes to do that. So what's the pain associated with that? Well, the pain may be that I don't really have what it takes. It'll take too much time away from my family. People will see me different. There's something that is unspoken that's causing an impasse that needs to be addressed. So this is part of what is illuminated then in a discussion when the beliefs and assumption that ghostwrite behavior can be illuminated and can come alive in a relationship, for example, with a professional coach.
Wow. And I know in my practice, because I work with the belief systems, a lot of people think that they can figure this out on their own. But because these are very buried in your subconscious, you do need, and I'd like you to speak to this, I believe that you need a coach to help sort out all these different voices in your head, the self-talk, as well as ask the right questions to bring up the subconscious thoughts that are trapped.
That's a very good point, because we live out our stories. we may not be aware of the beliefs and assumptions that ghostwrite those stories or even some of the storylines. But, for example, someone begins to work with me, and they may not know the right questions to ask. They may not know exactly what to address, but whatever is limiting them, whatever they're struggling with, will come alive in the relationship. For example, a CEO is referred by her board of directors to get coaching, and I'm referred that person because she has alienated everyone in the executive suite, and she's about to get fired. She's had a compromise in the social and emotional intelligence and relating to people, and the result is that everybody in the executive suite is irritated at her, avoids her, and kind of stonewalls. So we began to work together, and guess what? She begins to alienate me. The process that's going on that she's not aware of and doesn't know how to address comes alive in the work with me. So what I consider is that she's doing the very best job that's possible of showing me exactly what it's like to be her. And when I put my ego on a blind trust, in other words, when I don't take it personally, I'm listening to her teach me what it's like to be her so I can teach it back to her so she can create a new story. So the essence of what needs to be addressed will come alive in the process. So it's not always easy, like, well, I need to, you know, I've got three things that I need to do and I need to kind of prioritize and figure out what they are. You know, that's easy. But this is the process that's so powerful and so meaningful when someone has their issues come alive that we can both create in this crucible that we've created together as a working alliance to understand and change that. There are ways, as you know, to understand and change mind software and even rewire the brain. So things like changes and creating new patterns are very possible. It takes informed work and a system to do it, but it's very, very possible. Because
it
habits
is very
are
common.
Simply our collection of repetitions. So any habits are changeable.
It is very possible. And in fact, there has been so much done in this area, and there are people like yourself and me who actually do this work, and so it is possible. We need to take a commercial break, but you know, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit more about the common assumptions that limit people from having wealth and prosperity. And so we'll be right back after a commercial break.
Are you concerned about your job, your career, or your future? When you become CARE certified in the workplace, these concerns will be eliminated while your career soars in the process. Up until now, CARE certification was only available through company-sponsored seminars, but now you can become CARE certified in the workplace on your own time. Order Module 1 today and begin the transformation. There's unlimited opportunity in the workplace today, provided you have the right strategy. Becoming CARE certified is the right strategy. For more information and to order, go to charliespeaking.com.
The 7th Annual Flexible Workplace Luncheon and Sloan Award Ceremony will be held Wednesday, September 26th at the Sugar Creek Country Club in Sugarland, Texas. This year's theme is Managing Performance for the Flexible Workplace. The event begins at 9 a.m. with local business executives discussing relevant issues regarding workplace flexibility. They will be discussing managing virtual teams, defining future work, measuring productivity, and much more. The luncheon and award ceremony will begin immediately following the discussion panel. This will include exhibitors and plenty of networking opportunities. For more information or to register, go to flexworks.org. That's flexworks.org. Or you can call 832-288-5631. Group Office Buys. Everything for the office. Great selection, great service, and great prices. Find out more at groupofficebuys.com. Group Office Buys, the power of group buying. Are you in the rhythm of life? Are you ebbing and flowing with change? What prevents you from becoming everything you want to be? Diana Rinkhoff offers a compelling approach to traditional psychology by working with clients to understand and change their belief systems as a catalyst to personal and professional transformation. She will give you tools, insights, and guidance to change beliefs that may be holding you hostage. What limiting beliefs are holding you back from achieving all that you desire in life? Find out more about Diana and how she can help you at DianaRankoff.com. Change your beliefs and change your life. Tune in on Mondays at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time to Life Changing Insights with Diana Rankoff on the Tough Talk Radio Network at TuffTalkRadioNetwork.com.
Today we're here with Dr. David Krueger, and he is the Executive Mentor Coach and CEO of Mentor Path. And he has transforming lives and professional performance by enhancing their financial and emotional well-being. And Dr. Krueger says, all you need is to get past your hidden, to get past these hidden obstacles and rewrite the next chapter in your success story. And that's what we've been finding out. And so, Dave, I wanted to ask you, we have all of these assumptions that limit our wealth and our prosperity. What do we do about these assumptions?
Well, as you train and teach, our beliefs are the mind's command to the brain, the software that drives behavior. So you have to change your behavior and your software. For example, the reason that 95% of people who diet and lose weight gain back their weight is they don't change their software, their body image. And here's a money example. 80% of all those in the United States who have won $3 million or more in the lottery went on to declare bankruptcy within the next 5 years. Their money changed, but their mindset, the basic assumptions about themselves and their money stories, didn't change. So they returned to their comfort zone, the internal thermostat of the familiar. And this was something I saw early on in analytic practice and now see in coaching. It's often a greater challenge to deal with success than it is to deal with scarcity or adversity, because success vaults you into an entirely new position. And unless you change some of the basic ways you see yourself, you'll revert back to that old comfort zone. Not because it's comfortable, but because it's familiar. And I've seen variations of this story in my professional life. When people move into extreme success, it's a huge challenge. You have to deal with the stimulation of that new level of success. You have to learn how to regulate yourself and stay with core values, even though now you have more money, possibilities, freedom, fame, whatever else has come your way. Probably the most extreme example I see in my coaching practice is working with professional athletes and actors. A fine athlete will go from zero to 40 or 50 million in 5 seconds of signing a contract. However, 60% of NFL and NBA players are bankrupt within 5 years of retirement. They need a coach off the court or field at least as much as on it.
You know, some of your statistics are just staggering, you know, because I guess the American dream is to have more money, more success, and yet those very things that people desire and wish for and chase after, you know, once they're attained, the statistics are saying that they're right back where they started.
Absolutely. Would this be a good time to do the first quiz?
Yes, I think so. Why don't we do that? Dave is going to share with us one of a quiz that we can learn more about ourselves. So tell us what you're going to do today.
Okay, just write down the number 1 and 2, and it's going to be a single figure.
Okay.
First question, my current annual income is blank. 2, in order to ensure happiness and contentment financially with no more money problems or worries, my annual income would need to be fill in that blank. Now, to discuss this for just a moment, Diane, want me to go ahead and discuss it now?
Sure.
Now, I've given this quiz to several hundred people over the last several years. And in more than 9 out of 10 cases, people's answers indicate that their annual income would need to be about twice the current level for them to feel happy and free from money worries. This means that somebody who makes $50,000 a year believes it would take roughly $100,000 a year in order to be financially content. Someone who makes $500,000 believes the figure would be about $1 million. And in discussions and follow-ups with people after this little poll, people actually have a doubling effect. In other words, once they achieve their hoped-for, let's say, $100,000 goal, when they make 50, now they believe it would take $200,000 to be content and happy. So there's a trailing double. So the story still stands. Whatever they make, they think it would take about double, even when they've doubled it. So this really raises the question of what good enough is. And specifically, more is not a goal, just like later's not a time and some's not an amount. So it brings into focus what our real goals are and what we want to do with that money.
Wow, that's eye-opening, isn't it? So how do we become more aware of what money can and can't do for us?
Well, at times, how we value things emotionally can overwrite our brain valuation. An emotionally significant question is one that became coupled in the past. For example, money can be equated with power, freedom, evil, greed, any number of things. So the mind can sometimes attach meaning, especially emotional couplings, that derail logical choices. So to recognize these meanings, we have to monitor our choices and question our ideas, even probe our reasoning. So there are a couple of simple questions to ask with each important choice that we make. Which choices are worth making? And how much does each choice cost? Whatever meanings and significance we attribute to money, the one reality it determines across all classes and cultures is choices.
The choices we're making. So those two questions again, which choice is worth making?
And how much does this choice cost? And every choice and every cost that involves money has at least two kinds of aspects. One is financial and the other is emotional. One has to do purely with money, but the other has to do with the emotion that we attach to it.
So are you suggesting that we actually are supposed to have this conversation with ourselves constantly as we're trying to decide, should I buy this? Do I need that new dress? Do I really need to spend that money on that new stereo?
It's worth considering spending as much time in how we spend our money as we do the work and effort and energy of making our money. So it is a good question. And with the thinking about every exchange involves two asking prices, financial and emotional, the conversation, though, that's often silent and automatic has many different dialects. For example, it was the debate I had with myself in my first official job. At age 8, I earned 10 cents a row chopping cotton for my dad on hot summer days. Now, that was back when family farms operated under the radar of child labor laws. When school started, I saw my classmates enjoying sodas and candies, and I joined them. But my treats were really quickly gone, and I thought about how hard I'd worked for that. And I asked, was that candy worth half a row of chopping cotton? Will I get enough from this soft drink to pay one row of cotton chopping? Real soon, it was a no to both questions. I learned early on what money cost. Now, this is something that we often teach our kids about what the value of money is, and we do, for example, as I did with mine, a clothes allowance, so that instead of an authority, we're a collaborator, and we can, you know, look at, well, is one horse and pony shirt worth two alligator shirts? But also, there's the component of what is the cost of money, because money always costs. Let me give you a couple of other examples. At an elaborate birthday party, the parent unconsciously whispers, "I'll give you what I never had as a child." We rationalize and bargain with ourselves when we spend at times. Well, you know, this seems like a lot of money to spend on an entertainment system, but if I spread it out over the next 11 years, it only costs 42 cents a day. And then my wife said, "Well, Dave, if you want the HDTV, just go ahead and get it." Now, one more example. We regard the same dollar differently depending on how it's obtained. Found money can be consumed frivolously. Gifted money can be spent almost without debate. Salary money, though, used after serious comparative choice. Savings or retirement money, only with definite need or emergency. And it's the same dollar. And the dollar doesn't even know who owns it any more than war bonds knew about the war. So a dollar has entirely different meanings and attributions depending on the category in our mind that we put it in.
Wow. Now, also, there's a difference between actually hard cash and credit cards, too. I've heard you talk about this.
Yes. Most of the studies show an average that is about 23% more that's spent when we use credit cards as when we write a check or use cash. Now, when you think about what happens at a brain level when we use credit cards, I mentioned whenever we make or spend money, it activates the pleasure center of the brain, and that produces dopamine, so it creates a high. That's the same drug that gets mimicked when you snort a little bit of coke. So it creates a high, the pleasure of making or spending money. Now, when you use a credit card, credit cards segment the pleasure of the purchase from the pain of repayment. When we pay something, an entirely different part of the brain gets activated, and it creates pain to let go of money, to give up and pay something that's really ours. So when this occurs together, we tend to balance it more and look at the pain versus the pleasure. But we use a credit card, and we segment the pleasure of the purchase from the pain of repayment. We even can put it off till next month, and then the optimism bias will say, "Well, we're going to have more money next month," or it's abstracted at least to the future. So credit cards are something that we have to really be aware of, because it can counter some of our most basic reasoning balance of our brains.
That's insightful, and it's so easy to just swipe that credit card, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So we need to take another commercial break, but when we come back, you know, I bet we're passing these stories on to our children, and in fact, as adults, I bet we have a few stories from our parents. So I want to hear what you have to say about that when we get back from a commercial break.
Great.
Are you a person of influence? Do you want to be someone that others look up to? Listen to Leadership Talk with Elaine B. Greaves every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central Time on the Tough Talk Radio Network to find your own voice. Leadership Talk is about empowering you for success and providing insight and information to make your life that much better. Join the conversation as Elaine's guests take you on a journey of discovery and helps you build relationships on a global scale. So become the leader in your own life with Elaine B. Greaves.
Tune in to KKHT 100.7 and listen to Ken Marsh, award-winning author, international keynote speaker, and host of The Word on Fearless Networking, a show about putting Christian networking principles into action, airing Monday through Friday, 7 to 7:15 p.m. on KKHT 100.7, The Word. Are you in the rhythm of life? Are you ebbing and flowing with change? What prevents you from becoming everything you want to be? Diana Rinkhoff offers a compelling approach to traditional psychology by working with clients to understand and change their belief systems as a catalyst to personal and professional transformation. She She will give you tools, insights, and guidance to change beliefs that may be holding you hostage. What limiting beliefs are holding you back from achieving all that you desire in life? Find out more about Diana and how she can help you at dianarankoff.com. Change your beliefs and change your life. Tune in on Mondays at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time to Life-Changing Insights with Diana Rankoff on the Tough Talk Radio Network at toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back, and we're here with Dr. David Krueger. And Dr. Krueger has just, in this last year, written a book, The Secret Language of Money. So it'll be one that you will want to pick up, because we're learning how much money actually affects everything in our lives. And now I bet some of these stories we picked up in childhood.
We do pass those stories on. Think about from the perspective of the child. Without realizing it, the parents tell a money story every day and lives it, even though they're not conscious of it. What money means to them, what money says about them, how much they think they deserve, how much they think they're worth or capable of, what would happen if they had more or less, how they regard people who have more or less. So our money story permeates everything we do. It ghostwrites every aspect of our lives. What we eat, drink, read, fear, plan, buy are all affected by our money stories. So our money stories become our life stories. And these are the things that children observe in their parents. And they're downloaded while we're talking about other things consciously. So the money story we live will be the one that we teach our children. And think about it in this way. The longest running relationship in your life is not with your parents, a sibling, or a close friend, but with money. Your parents discussed it before you arrived, and long after you're gone, your heirs will invest, spend, or debate the money you've amassed. You may get 10 years from a car, but money doesn't rust. You may get 50 or more years from a spouse, but you can't break up with money or get it to love you more. Yet, despite the longevity of money in our lives, most of us never really dig deeper into our relationship with it other than the balance of our bank account or the bills in our wallets. And our money story is not about our assets, our debt, our cash flow. It's about our relationship with money, the story that we tell ourselves and live that has to do with money.
You know, Dave, in my practice, I'm seeing two places. One is parents are very frustrated with their children because they are not doing what parents think with their money, getting the job, saving their money, being more responsible with money. And so I hear that a lot. And then I also have clients who are on the other end, and they are moving into retirement, and they have not saved adequately, or they're having a lot of financial problems. Of course, the economy, we have a lot of things that are attributed to that. I mean, the economy has been kind of rough. But why is that on both ends? I mean, in the middle, we're making money, but we really see that on both ends of the spectrum. Can you help us understand a little bit more about it?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'll try to be brief because it's a really comprehensive question. On the one end, with children and adolescents, what they mean by saving is not the same as what their parents mean. What they mean by the future is not the same as what their parents mean. When they say saving, they're talking about $12 for the CD. When they talk about the future, they're talking about this weekend. So they don't have the concept of the future and the vision, the perspective that parents do, because theirs is one of immediacy. Now, the same, in a way, is the challenge with people to save for retirement, because retirement and saving for the future is an abstraction. And spending and enjoying money for the present is a present pleasure. So it's awfully hard to give up a current pleasure for a future abstraction. In fact, the best way that people have found to save for the future is to make one choice that's a good decision, a one-time choice that they don't have to continue making or find money for. They make a choice to transfer an amount of money, same every month, the first of every month, from their checking into their retirement fund. It's a good choice that they make once. Now, also, consider this. There have been some studies, initially by Emily Pronin in Princeton and more recently by a group at Stanford, that show that when we can envision our future selves, when we can actually see what we look like in the future, that we will save significantly more money for retirement. In fact, the Stanford group did computer-enhanced projections into the future to show what we would look like at 70, 80, and 90, and it immediately enhanced the savings for retirement by 2 to 3-fold. Now, they're doing some similar things to show projections of what it would be like if they continue to gain 3 or 4 pounds a year, what it would be like if they continue to smoke, what it would be like if they work out 6 times a week. So being able to see the future is not a quality that adolescents have unless you understand their picture of the future. And that's this weekend. But in adults, we need to find ways to do that, to kind of outsmart our brain, because there's no immediate reward for saving for the future. So it's a challenge, as you suggested.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I was just thinking about how that you're right, and we're talking two different languages, and that's probably the right there at the root of it. You know, we have, we like to buy things, and we're really kind of looking at the short term when we do that. How is money? How does that reflect our self-worth when we buy stuff, when we save money? How is our self-worth reflected?
Well, spending money generates the perception, both by the spender and the observer, of having money. Fulfilling a wish can actually create the desire. And when desires define identity, they can become unrelenting. For example, many people who fall heavily into debt don't necessarily have psychological problems, but because their spending takes on a life of its own. And spending money is addictive. It changes a state of mind. And if you buy something before you can afford it, you simply end up paying more for it. So there's elastic boundaries that distance the obligation of debt. You know, a credit card segments, as we talked about, the pleasure of purchase from the pain of future payment. And then the elastic boundaries come into place because the commitment that we made, maybe not in ourselves, to writing, not concretely about paying it off next month, stretches a little bit more, and soon enough there's a real problem with debt. In fact, the very first client I worked with, and I keep everything totally confidential, so I'll mention just this from a bird's eye view, was a professional who worked in an area having to do with money, and it took about 3 months before she could confess to me that she had a debt of $500,000 that even her husband didn't know about. So it's a matter, when there is debt, that there's a debt cycle that begins with an urge to buy something that maybe can't be afforded, yet feeling compelled by it because we believe it'll make us feel a certain way. So spending is emotional, and then the dopamine makes us feel better. And then there's the shame, the recognition of not living up to our internal ideal because we've spent money that we don't have. And then there's also an interesting phenomenon about disavowal. Lawrence Ozubel, an economist at the University of Maryland, found that credit card holders, only know 4 out of every $10 that they owe. In other words, 60, and this, to say this in a different way, only 4 out of 100 actually, out of 4 out of 10 actually know how much they owe. And this is not like being a few bucks off, but six out of 10 people have absolutely no idea how much credit card debt they have. So they've taken this disavowal and distancing to a new level. So then it recreates itself, because out of this shame of not living up to one's own internal ideal, there's the need to try to feel better. And in bad times and economic downturns, people spend more money. In fact, the day that Lehman Brothers failed, the shops along Fifth Avenue had one of the best days in their history. People spend more when they're really down because it makes them feel up. So there's a whole consideration and balance to doing this.
Wow, that's an interesting too. And I think that brings up another problem, that what happens, I mean, we all have a significant person in our lives, but, you know, when you have a couple, one is very frugal with their money and the other is more like, I want to buy it now. There creates a lot of conflict in a relationship because of how we view money.
It absolutely does. And the example you just gave says that the two people have a very different money story. So there's going to be an inherent need to create a common ground and to negotiate, because when one sees money as something to have fun with, to enjoy, and to really spend as a way of fulfilling desires, and the other sees money as the ticket to security and ultimate future freedom. So when money means spending is fun, money means security, there are two very different agendas, two very different money stories. So rather than have a continuing battle about this, there needs to be a compromise for that. And often, and I've seen this a number of times in working with couples, that whenever there are two dichotomies like that, they're two halves of the same whole. In other words, the saver is farming out the spendthrift to the spouse, and vice versa with the spouse. All it takes is one of that couple to say, if the spendthrift begins to say, okay, well, you know, I think we really do need to buckle down, we really do need to save for the future. You would think that the saver would say, well, finally you're seeing it my way, but that's not what happens. The saver will say, well, wait, we can't just, you know, stop having all of our fun. You know, so the roles shift. So that's the desire and the obstacle. Show me an obstacle, and I'll show you a desire. Those two halves make a whole. Let me tell you a story that kind of illustrates this. There was a cartoon, and in the first frame, the dog was ferociously barking at a cat, straining at its leash, barking, let me just at him. In the next frame, there was a picture of the cat, and the cat was no slouch. The cat was at least as big as the dog and really mean-looking herself. The next frame, the rope snapped, so the dog was totally free to pursue the cat. The dog looked back, was horrified, frightened to death, ran back, tied a triple knot, and then extended fully again, let me just at him. So at times, when we're really free to do something, it reveals that we need an obstacle to balance things. So this is what happens sometimes when couples are in the polar positions that you described, is it needs to be dealt with to create a common ground so that both can own their entire story instead of farming out part of their story to the spouse.
To the spouse. That's great.
Does that make sense?
We're going to need to take one more commercial break, but when we get back, I want you to tell everyone how they get a hold of you and sign up immediately for your seminar, because I think it could change our lives. So we'll be right back.
Everyone needs someone special, someone who is ready and willing to listen, someone who will allow you to share your own personal story. That someone is Linda Ballesteros. Power Talk with Linda Ballesteros is an extraordinary forum for empowerment, a safe, warm, and welcoming environment for heartfelt discussion. Networking strategist, motivational speaker, Self-improvement advocate and author, Linda Ballesteros is engaging and approachable. She helps others realize their self-worth and develop their true potential. Get to know and love Linda like so many others who have already experienced the positive, caring atmosphere she cultivates and encourages. She seeks to help people open the gateway to their ultimate self and explore what is possible together. Linda deeply understands the unique person that you are. Discover the energy. Discover the exuberance. Discover Power Talks with Linda Ballesteros. Find out more at powertalkswithlindaballesteros.com.
Sign up now for an approved Virtual Tone VoiceOver IP solution and receive a free Polycom SoundPoint IP5000 conference phone or a Polycom VVX500 desktop phone. This promotional offer ends September 30th, 2012. Certain restrictions apply. For more information, please go to virtualtone.net or call 888-755-6864. Virtual Tone, the ultimate communication solution. Freedom from your old phone solution is closer than you think. Call today.
Welcome back. And Dave, we have learned so much today, and I know that you have seminars in your book. Tell us how we learn more, because I am ready to rewrite my money story.
Well, thank you. It's been such a privilege to be here. If anyone has any direct questions of me, my telephone is 281-397-9001. My email is dkruger, D-K-R-U-E-G-E-R, at mentorpath.com. MENTORPATH. My website is mentorpath.com. At the bottom of the home page, you'll see four pictures of books that are CD programs along with workbooks. And the one that most relates to what we've been talking about today is the Roadmap for Money Mastery. And it's a systematic way to understand and change a money story. And the last training that I have in 2012 for New Money Story Mentors. It's a licensed specialty certified training for New Money Story Mentors. Begins this Thursday, and I'll be happy to talk with anybody who might want to do that training. It's licensed and specialty certified for coaching and financial professionals, executives who deal with people's money stories and want to have a way to mentor those stories. So feel free to approach me with any questions or comments. I'm eager to hear from you.
Okay, and so if we just wanted, so by the one, the New Money Story, it is a self-paced course that we could actually just start on our own.
Yes, the Roadmap for Money Mastery. There's a workbook with work tools and exercises and five CDs, and it's the picture at the bottom of the home page, Roadmap for Money Mastery.
And could you give us a little more of an idea what, okay, by taking this, you know, I'm convinced, you know, after listening to the show that, you know, I may have some of my stories off around money. And so by doing this, what can I expect as a result? I know you're not guaranteeing our whole life will change and we'll win the lottery, but what exactly can we expect as a result of it?
Well, it's really about understanding our relationship with money, to recognize, own, and assess our money stories, to decide what to change, to map those changes, and then create the changes as well as the changes in our minds and brain. Those are the seven steps of the Roadmap system. That's the acronym, because it's really about changing mind, brain, and behavior. For example, we weren't taught this in school, but a belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in our brains, and we can't just lay up a new fact alongside the ones that are already there and expect it to overwrite what's already there. So we can't just learn a new fact or learn a new way of looking at something and expect to download that, because one of the most common mistakes that we make is to add a new pattern onto the ones that already exist. So it's about understanding and deconstructing our stories, much of which may not be conscious, and writing a new, more effective story and creating the next chapters of that story to be ones that are fulfilling, enhancing, and achieving exactly the goals that someone wants.
Right. And I can just attest to this, because when I work with people, there's multiple levels of beliefs. And we have those fundamental beliefs that I believe that's where you're working. And then we have the operational beliefs, and then we just have everyday beliefs. So we can't just hear what you have to say today and feel that we can make a change. These actually have to be rewritten in our mind. Our software has to be changed. And so I encourage everyone who's listening today to go to mentorpath.com and check out Dave's website and all the different things he has to offer. Or pick up his book, more importantly. Find out more about your money story and how you can rewrite it. So, Dave, do you have any final words that we can, you know, really go away this week and make something different happen for us when we're thinking about our money story?
The important thing, I'll offer a principle and then an application. The important thing is that we can understand and rewrite our money stories. The most important aspect of what we do is the state of mind that we're in, because our state of mind determines the meaning we attach to something and then the behavior that follows. So most people look at strategy and story first, but the state of mind is most important. And the first step is always getting regulated and centered in a state of mind to balance mind and brain. An example of this would be a recent blog that I have. And if you're interested in the blog, you can see the blog tab at the top of MentorPath. It's on money psychology and neuroeconomics. Is that we get in a certain state of mind by shopping, and when we buy something, when we purchase something, it creates that state of mind that vaults up a bit because we spent money and changed our state of mind. We are significantly more likely to buy more things on that shopping trip, maybe even things that we didn't intend to buy because we're in a different state of mind. So the most important success strategy that I see with the executives, with the professional people I work with, is understanding and regulating states of mind. It's an art and a science of itself, and it's crucial.
That is a fabulous way to start the week, because I know for myself that we have to be more conscious in everything we do. And without that consciousness, I wonder how many people have actually sat down and thought about some of the things that you've said today. And I think that your workbook and will really help. I know that I've done one of your workbooks, and so it really helped really to kind of, you take people step by step to really uncover what they're thinking. And so I know that we can change our money story. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Dave. I really have learned a lot, and I'm sure everyone who's listening has too.
Thank you. So, it's been total fun and a privilege to do it with you, Diane.
Well, thank you. I want to remind everybody that this show is archived to anyone out there, and so that they can hear more about what Dave has to say. Next week, we're going to have Cinda Jordan join us, and she is the founder of the Center for Self-Discovery. And I want to tell you, everyone I know has worked with Cinda. She does an incredible work with deep self-inquiry in pattern work. Now, what this means is she looks at the archetypes and the shadows that they present in our lives, and help us to unwind these archetypal patterns that we get into. So I encourage you, next week you will not want to miss. It's just like this week, tremendous amount of information that you can see how your life can change by doing some things a little bit differently. So I encourage you to tell someone about the radio show. And remember, we're at 1 o'clock every Monday, and we will have another exciting guest for you next week. So have a great week. Take Dave's advice, and we'll see you next week. Until then, bye.
This has been another edition of Life Changing Insights with Diana Renkoff, brought to you by Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest of Life Changing Insights, please go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.